Judging by the number of works with titles such as Death and Transfiguration, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, The Moldau, and so forth, the average listener would be justified in assuming that music is able to tell a story and paint a picture. Moreover, countless program notes tend to support the idea that music is able to convey a narrative, and especially in the case of opera, to portray character. But let's see just how far music is really able to go in these matters. We can grant immediately that music can imitate some of the sounds of nature. The sound of thunder, for example, can be suggested, and with quite a degree of realism, by a roll on the kettle drum. And by using a flute, it's very possible to imitate a bird. But these are, for the most part, momentary imitations. They're not music, since a piece of music is a continuous, developed work. It's possible to use these imitations of nature as starting points, so to speak, and to develop musical works out of them. For example, the early French composer Jean-Philippe Rameau created this musical idea as an imitation of the clucking of the hen. The imitation is not a literal one, by the way, since this is a genuine musical idea, such as I'm afraid never came out of the mouth of any hen. But when our minds are armed in advance with the thought that this is meant to suggest the clucking of a hen, then it does seem very appropriate. Now, using that idea, which, as we can hear, only suggests the clucking of a hen, Rameau proceeds to build an entire composition out of it. But notice, as you hear a portion of it, that we are now in the realm of music. Rameau develops that brief phrase and does things with it that no hen would ever think of doing. That relatively simple example demonstrates the very important distinction that must be borne in mind. And that is, that while music is capable of imitating the sounds of nature, those imitations are just momentary phenomena. But a real musical composition is a process of continuing thought and development. But let's see now why it is so often said that music can tell a story or paint a picture. Suppose that you were attempting to choose some music to accompany a scene depicting a storm at sea. Surely this music would be appropriate to that purpose. If you wanted some music to accompany a quiet family scene at home, this would do. Certainly, if given those two scenes and those two pieces of music, everyone would correctly match the turbulent music to the storm at sea and the calm music to the quiet scene at home. That might seem to imply that music can depict a scene. But without the prior suggestion of a storm at sea, could the first piece by itself unmistakably portray a storm and nothing else? The answer is no. You may have recognized the music. It was really an excerpt from Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, which has nothing to do with the sea. The portion that I chose was the one that supposedly depicted the enmity between the two families, the Montagues and the Capulets, and the calm piece had nothing whatsoever to do with a quiet scene at home. Actually, it was from the slow movement of Beethoven's Piano Sonata, Opus 7, and it's not intended to tell any story or to depict any scene. Yet it was appropriate to the scene that I had suggested. Now, isn't it apparent from the ways in which these pieces of music lend themselves to the depiction of a variety of scenes in each case, that all that music can do is to convey a mood that's appropriate to the mood of the scene? Turbulence and excitement in the first case, and calm in the second case. But it's a characteristic of music that it is absolutely incapable of specifying what it's being excited about, or what it's being calm about. It can lend itself to any scene that has the appropriate emotional tone. And once that emotional tone or mood has been established, the composer develops and extends his musical ideas, just as Rameau did with his musical idea that was meant to suggest the clucking of a hen. Tchaikovsky's turbulent music was no more capable of portraying, specifically and without question, the enmity between the Montagues and the Capulets than it was able to portray a storm. Therefore, we see that even when a composer gives a title to a work, or assigns a story to it, he is actually incapable of getting any closer to a real telling of the story than to supply music with an appropriate mood. But then, what about Wagner and his music dramas, in which he uses what he calls a leading motive, or in German, a Leitmotiv, to identify each character and object, and even the psychological drives of the characters? This is a very clever system, but does it enable the music to tell the story? Not at all. Granted that Wagner was a good enough composer so that he represented a hero or a heroic character by a powerful and forceful melody, and a more restrained character or idea, appropriately, by a quieter, more lyrical melody. But all literary ideas and characters that have a similar emotional quality are therefore of necessity going to be represented by musical ideas whose emotional qualities are similar. Thus, in the music drama Tristan und Isolde, we have these three leading motives, each one representing a different idea. First, this is the musical idea that represents desire. It's certainly very appropriate. And here's the leading motive or melody that represents the love filter. And now the leading motive that stands for the magic casket. And if you have trouble telling them apart, take comfort. So do I. Not one of those musical ideas, as suitable as they all are, can possibly describe or portray without question only the single thought or object that it supposedly represents. Therefore, as clever as this system is, of identifying every character and every idea by a musical leading motive, it's nowhere inherent in the music itself. Rather, it's an extra musical concept, arbitrarily imposed upon the music from without. In other words, again because of music's inability to portray specific literary or pictorial ideas, there's no way in which any listener can tell what any leading motive stands for, unless he's informed about it in words. This is the basis of any music that supposedly tells a story or paints a picture. It's only by the arbitrary ascription of an idea or a picture to a melody that that melody is assumed to stand for the idea or picture. Thus, this melody is said to represent a river in Bohemia, the Moldau. Yet it cannot actually describe the river. The best that can be said is that its flowing quality makes it appropriate to the depiction of a river. But I submit that an equally appropriate musical depiction of a river is this melody. No one thinks of a river upon hearing that melody, while many people immediately assume that the first melody is an apt representation of a river. The reason is simply prior suggestion. The first tune is called the Moldau, and therefore is assumed to be about a river. The second melody is actually from Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony, but it's the movement subtitled Shepherd's Hymn, and bears the further legend, Happy and Thankful Feelings After the Storm. Nowhere is there any intent in this music to suggest a river. Yet wouldn't it have done just as well for the purpose as the melody associated with the Moldau? Incidentally, that same melodic idea of the Moldau also serves as the national anthem of the State of Israel. There is one device that a composer can use by which he can suggest a story. Tchaikovsky, in his 1812 overture, attempts to convey an event in history. In order to do so, he counts on our familiarity with two melodies. One is the Marseillaise, fragments of which appear this way. The other is the Old Tsarist Hymn, which was the Russian national anthem in Tchaikovsky's time. It's pounded out in the bottom of the orchestra. Is that Napoleon's army was defeated by the Russians, because the Marseillaise, symbolizing the French, is heard only in fragments, while the Russian national anthem is heard complete and more powerfully orchestrated. But, The narrative intent of the music is lost upon a listener who does not know in advance what each of the melodies symbolizes. Moreover, without a prior knowledge of the historical facts, the listener cannot tell from the music alone just what the fragmented version of the Marseillaise signifies. Thus we see once again that music by itself cannot relate a story. The composer develops his material musically, but symbolism cannot actually enter this realm of music. All symbolism, whether historical, dramatic, or religious, must be applied to music arbitrarily from without. It is not inherent in the music itself. What about other specific ideas that music is supposed to convey? Program notes almost invariably tell us that the opening phrase of Richard Strauss's tone poem, Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks, means, once upon a time. In the first place, the assertion that that succession of notes means once upon a time is utterly indefensible, since, as we've seen, there is no music in existence that can convey a single verbal idea. Further, music abounds in phrases that are similar to that one in feeling, in tempo, and in lyricism. Then doesn't simple logic dictate that they should all mean once upon a time? But no such claim is made for all the other similar melodies. Those words are ascribed only to this phrase because it introduces a work that supposedly describes the antics of a medieval rogue. In their zeal to tell us how the music conveys a narrative, which is actually an impossibility, the writers of the program notes fail to point out the most important musical fact about that melody, and that is that those notes, when they are speeded up, form one of the main melodies of the work. Now let's hear them a little faster. And faster still. And they become the start of the main melody. That's what the music is about. Strauss's subject matter is not the story of Till Eulenspiegel, which cannot be told in music, but rather that lyrical opening melody with its own mood, its own coloration, and the ways in which he can transform it, develop it, so that it appears in different guises with different moods and different colorations as a result of changes in the speed, the harmonies, the rhythms, and the orchestration. In its final form, that melody had a jocose, perky feeling that makes it appropriate to the character of the playful, troublemaking rogue Till Eulenspiegel, but nothing more. Obviously, just as we saw in the case of Wagner and his leading motives, a composer will write music whose overall feeling tone matches the feeling tone of the character he is attempting to portray. But further than that, he cannot go. What happens then to the frequently made assertion that composers portray character in their operas? Well, the brave hero will of course be represented by powerful, forthright music, the beautiful heroine by lyrical, gentle music. But we find that most heroic, powerful music by any one composer usually resembles all the other heroic and powerful music by that same composer, just as his more restrained music bears a family resemblance to most of the rest of his restrained music. Here's Mozart in his opera Don Giovanni, supposedly portraying the character of the amorous nobleman Don Juan.
Ma ci daremmo mano, ma mi dirai di sì. Vedi non è lontano, partiam ben mio da qui.
And here's Mozart's depiction of an entirely different character, Leporello, who is the Don's servant.
Nella bionda,
They're obviously similar in style, musically. In other words, regardless of the character he is allegedly portraying in his operas, Mozart always sounds like Mozart. And similarly, Wagner always sounds like Wagner, and Verdi sounds like Verdi. Neither of those two excerpts gives us any insight into the respective characters. Instead, they give us two examples of Mozart's handling of melody, harmony, rhythm, and orchestration. Moreover, if there is any validity to the idea that a composer can portray character, then isn't it logical to expect to find some degree of correspondence or unanimity when two skilled composers depict the same character? But here's Strauss's depiction of that same Don Juan. Does it bear any correspondence to Mozart's? Not at all. What we do find is that that music sounds like all other music by Strauss that has a similar emotional feeling. What comes to mind upon hearing that is not Don Juan, but Strauss. And if it's maintained that that melody represents the romantic ardor of Don Juan in his search for the essence of woman, then I submit that this melody by Strauss would do just as well. That melody was from an entirely different work by Strauss, called Death and Transfiguration. It's supposed to represent transfiguration, but I maintain that it could have been used by Strauss in place of the Don Juan melody, and we would have found it equally convincing. Neither melody conveys either Don Juan or transfiguration. Both of them are examples of Strauss creating magnificent abstract music with a similar emotional coloration. In view of all this, it becomes all the more mystifying to find that commentators have ascribed different specific meanings to different works by the same composer, even when those works were obviously similar in style. For example, we're told that Beethoven's Fifth Symphony means victory over fate. While the same composer's Third Symphony is said to mean heroism, despite the fact that it's written in a similar style and is cut out of the same cloth, so to speak. Nobody can tell you what those passages mean. Their meanings vary with each individual listener, and even within the same listener at different times. The meaning of any piece of music, or of any portion of a piece of music, is a matter that's between the composer and you.